Zals, read it to me. Durban, Saturday,
70-30.
Come on, mate.
Let's go. The Durban weather, mate, they say it's going to be 28 degrees on Saturday. That's balmy. Not much wind, not much rain. In fact, no rain. 20% chance of precipitation. It's going to be a great night for rugby, mate.
A great night or a great afternoon?
Well, both.
17:30 kickoff. Are they going to come out? Is the Durban Faithful going to come out and support the Sharks? Can the Sharks do the double? You said on Monday, emphatically no!
They will not do the double, no. But it will be a cracking game, a cracking derby. Two South African coastal teams, mate. When the boys from the beach get together, it's good rugby. So I'm looking forward to it. No excuses. I don't want to hear the Jean de Villiers. The ball was slippery after the game. Both teams must have a full go, mate. Full send. Let's have a ripper.
What's the mood like in the camp? How's it been at the HBC? Oh, the boys are happy. Hey, the boys are happy. The boys are in good spirits.
I mean, everybody's, you know, you can only imagine. It's a South African derby, mate. Everybody is pumped up and ready to go.
It's United Rugby Championship weekend. It is in Durban. It's the Shark. The Shark Slayers. The Stormers were not in Cape Town. They are there. It's the Stormers against the Sharks in a coastal derby. And up north, we have Jan Ackerman's Bulls going to Ellis Park to play the Lions in Arilla at 2:30. I just want to see 20,000 people at Ellis Park.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. I mean, that you really have to love your rugby, I suppose. But it'd be great. Let's get as many people in there as possible. And the last time these two teams played, what was it, 76 points? And the Lions came away with it. And now they go again, mate. And this time it is going to be no holds barred. Both teams are showing signs of life there. Loving the Lions campaign so far. Playing some good rugby. And the Yixke Derby.
Any prospects of it being a draw again? Can they do three draws in a row in three different countries?
They said the Lions are artists. They've got two draws on the last two. Can they make it three out of three? Mate?
Three draws in three different countries, all in the 20s.
Never been done before.
Eh? Bank on the Lions to kind of come close to doing.
Yeah, no, it will be close.
I message you from Akers. He'll just like 2,000 there. Okay. Not 20,000. 2,000 will be a record crowd for the Lions. As someone said, why don't you take it to the Wanderers? 20,000 in the Bull Ring to be a great atmosphere. But no, we go back to Ellis Park. I think it's all about tax write-offs, and they go and play there.
I don't care where they play, mate. If you're the Lions, you just want to win. And I mean, you know, having a crowd there definitely helps, but the winning brings the crowds. Uckers had crowds there.
Where did they win last time? Where was the last time they won? Where?
What do you mean, where?
Anyway, where did the Lions win last time?
What do you mean, where did they win? As in a game?
A game. When was the last time they won a game?
Let me go look, mate. I don't know. Where was it?
Come on, you see.
It wasn't at home.
Draws. They've had two draws.
Yeah.
When was the last time they won a game?
Let's go.
Fumbling again, eh? I'll ask you to prepare.
Don't you know, mate? I can't believe it.
I'll ask you to prepare.
I can't believe you don't know.
This is an indictment on what's happening at the HBC. Guys,
don't you know when last the Lions won? I can tell you, mate, that they are...
Enough of this mate stuff, bro. Kazzy.
Oh, mate, they won 44-5 in the Curry Cup. Here we go.
That's it.
They beat Lyon, mate. They beat Lyon.
We're at Ellis Park.
Yes, mate.
They did. And only just.
Kills your point, mate. I know what you were going for there. You didn't get it.
What was I was
going
for?
You were trying to put in a shot there at Ellis Park. But, mate, they did win. They did win at home.
I was actually going to say, if you had said to me that they won in Gelanekla, I would say, well, that's where they should play. But you actually got me there. You got me with a little late jab.
You got to do your prep, mate.
I should have done my prep. I should have had the answer before I asked the question. As you can see, this is raw and uncut.
Speaking about answers before questions.
Unfiltered.
That creaking sound is not my knees. It's this chair.
Okay. All right, mate. Creaking, the Stormers were a week ago. You were bullish on Monday afternoon. You had come from the HBC. Apparently, the mood was great there. It was like the game never happened. It's moving along. You can't change the past. You can only shape the future. That was the narrative coming to the camp. Nothing to fear. The only thing you fear there is potentially the curry and the bunny chow, but that's it. Don't eat before the game. Have your liquids, have your fruit, your protein shakes, and go out there and give the Sharks a lesson. Was that the narrative all week?
This week?
Well, not last week.
No. Look, everybody's zoned in and focused. Like I say, it's a derby game. Everybody's very, very obviously, zoned in. Everybody's very keen to win these derbies because they play against guys that are in the pecking order for Bok jobs. So there is a lot on the line. And I think that'll probably go for both camps. In fact, all four teams that are in action for South Africa this week, it's double derby. So there's definitely a sort of uptick in the concentration, I would say. But But yeah,
okay, interesting. I'm going to interrupt you there.
It's certainly not somber, mate.
Are you saying there wasn't one last week?
Mate, they don't care. When they play other teams, mate, no focus. Everybody's on the beach. No, no, no. Obviously, there's, you know, these oaks are professionals. I'm just saying.
Really?
You don't have to sell a story to players when they're playing against South African rivals. Really?
Okay, so what did they feel went wrong last week?
I don't know what they felt, mate. I don't know what they felt. Well, I can tell you what went wrong, mate.
The team that came
to Cape Town scored more points than the team from Cape Town.
Just the finishing. If we hadn't lost those five lineups, we would have won.
But I mean, that's true of every game. Where's there a game where you lose, where you go, you know what, we got everything right and we lost?
Well, there was a guy called Razor Robinson. He once coached the All Blacks. He said if we made that last pass, it would have been different.
I mean, if I've heard that once, man, I've heard it.
We were one pass away from playing the ultimate game.
That's how it is.
But you got to respect Australia for beating us in the Bledisloe.
At last.
We were five lineouts away from thrashing the Sharks.
Oh. Mate.
That was a great win for the Sharks. And, you know, we've given them a due all week. It's time to bash them again.
So, look, the Sharks beat the Stormers in Cape Town for the first time. They've played them nine times in the URC. The Sharks have won twice. The Lions beat the Bulls the last time they played them. They've only beaten them twice in nine attempts in the URC. So, for both the sort of traveling heavyweights, there is a lot on the line because you don't want to relinquish this history of success, this form guide, I suppose. And for the two other teams, the hosts, it's a great opportunity to build a momentum and to start to change the narrative.
Well, if we look at the South African Conference, the Sharks are top, even though they're 11th on the URC table. I do, because it's the Curry Cup.
Exactly.
It's the Curry Cup and another guy.
You're right.
That's what the guys think. They think we've got to win the South African Conference and we take it as silverware.
You said that with no conviction at all. Like you were saying, it's only pretend.
Why does it look like a wooden spoon? Because it is. But I do believe the mood was great.
Mate, when you say the Sharks are top, all the teams have got 10 points except the Bulls.
Yes.
So they're ahead on what, points difference?
Yeah. Exactly.
Mate, literally the Sharks are on top by 8 points.
Thanks to the Maul try, the conversion, and the Stormers are not getting a conversion.
As they say in prison, mate, a week is a long time.
Thank God I haven't been there yet, but do you speak from experience?
Of course I do, mate.
Okay. Always tough games, these derbies. Form book goes out the window. Old cliche, but it certainly did last weekend. Won in the league, unbeaten, played 14th in the league, and said it at the time, watch the tape again. The side that lost looked like they were 14th. And the side that won looked like they were leading the pack. It was a great performance with intensity from the Sharks. Andre Esterhazy led from the front. Complete performance. JP Peterson, well, fully got one over Dobbo, without a doubt. But as said all week, we have to back it up. We have to beat them again and go into the break, fired up for the next phase of the URC. For the Stormers, like you said, Zales, 11 from 13 in all competitions. Come on, they've got to be doing something right. And 8 from 9 now in the URC. One poor day at the office certainly doesn't define this team.
Why was it that pause at the end of that? Did you want me to say something, mate? Absolutely. I mean,
trying to get you an increase here.
No, look, mate, obviously the result definitely not ideal for Stormers and Stormers fans, but this week a great opportunity to turn things around and bounce back. And that's where your mettle is tested, right? So you've hit a wall, you've hit a speed bump, there's some adversity, and now you've got to respond to it. And that's what happens this week.
It's a big week in the context of the URC because the Six Nations starts next week.
What?
The Six Nations. The Guineas are Six Nations. It's an international tournament played by six teams up north.
Okay.
One of them is France. You don't know, I think, because those players never travel south. There's also a team called Scotland, who every year tell it's going to be their year, and they end fourth. There's a team played Italy who say they're in for two wins, and it's a glorious year. And there's a team called England who say this is our year, and then we'll be world champions.
Tell us about Wales, mate.
And there's a team called Ireland. They'd say, this is where we get defined. and there's a team called Wales who say, thank you for allowing us to still play.
to keep coming back.
So that is the Six Nations. But most of the teams are made up of URC players. And no one can tell me. It is Thursday morning that we are filming this, and it will go on air as you're watching. It will be Thursday afternoon. No one can tell me how many of the squads have released players back in to the URC for this weekend's games. Mm. Now, I know teams were away, like Ireland was away in Portugal because Bundiaki got kicked out because he was very naughty. He swore at the referee several times in the derby at Connacht against Leinster in Galway. So he's out, got 6 weeks. He misses this weekend's game and he misses the first three Six Nations games. It was reduced to 4 weeks. So he's out. But if you look at the matchups, if you take especially Glasgow, and they are half the Scottish team, mm-hmm. two-thirds of the Scottish team. If those players aren't playing, it makes their matchup very different.
Very different.
You look at all those teams, it's a punter's nightmare this weekend because, one, you don't know up until now who is playing, and two, they are radically reduced in terms of quality, which brings me back to our derbies. It's a great opportunity for the tabletopping Stormers to get back on that horse and actually win. Equally, it's a great one for the Sharks to continue their momentum and the Bulls and kind of get into that top eight, consolidate a top eight placement before we go into the break.
Stormers are second on the log, mate, not tabletopping anymore.
They are tabletopping in my eyes, mate. They will never be number
they
two.
Do have a game in
they will never be number two. Win or lose, they will be number one.
Yes. That was a great trip down the Six Nations, man. And good questions there. I don't have the answers to whether those players will play. And I suppose even if they were available, do you want a guy with 1 foot in, 1 foot out, thinking about staying healthy for the Six Nations? Probably not. So I would imagine that it's not full strength sides or what?
I would like to think that if I went to Portugal with Ireland this week to train.
Then I'm probably not going to be.
I'm not going to be. I'm not going to be in Galway.
Well, there's your answer.
Unless I'm Bundiaki and I'm just watching. Okay?
Bundy was ahead of the game, mate.
Bundy, who does the six-match campaign?
You're like, honestly, I need some time off. Hey,
who needs the first three weeks? I'll come back in for the tail end when we just lift the big trophy.
Yeah.
An interesting week. And then kind of 31st of January, it all ends. It really has been an intense, intense period. URC, Investec Champions Cup, those who played in the EPCR Challenge Cup, and especially our players who came off the back of those November tests and went basically straight in to playing.
Totally.
In the Investec Champions Cup and then basically into those big derbies at home where you had a lot of those Springboks playing.
Yep.
The Japanese leagues also started. So those guys who did play in November for the Box went into like a two-week preseason and basically into the league stages. So February is a massive, massive month for especially our domestic players where they finally get a fortnight off or some form of reprieve.
Yeah. No, truth. 100%. I mean, this is the lull in the global season. I mean, I know the BOC players have got those enforced breaks, but it is hell of a arduous and hell of a long. And I mean, there's talk about global alignments and hopefully that happens because without it, player turnover is going to become a real thing.
Because this feels like our December, you and I, commentating on games, working so hard. Behind the scenes, you more so than me when it comes to crunching numbers. It's like, this is like, how's your February looking? Great. It's just Six Nations, nothing else. I may get a Saturday afternoon off.
Yeah.
Don't have to file for the Sunday Times on deadline, on final whistle.
But isn't that what makes the Six Nations enjoyable? Well, for me, it makes the Six Nations enjoyable because there's no implications. I can just watch it like a fan and just enjoy it for what it is.
I can. And I mean, we will chat about the Six Nations on Monday. And who we think are favourites, the star players to watch, who has played well in the Vestic Champions Cup, who's played well in the URC. But bringing it back to, it's a really cool and in true South African lacquer, Naviak, with these two derbies, a coastal derby and one up north at Ellis Park, our spiritual home when it comes to rugby in South Africa, especially when the Springboks play.
Mm.
Let's focus on the Sharks because you've done a lot of work on them. What makes them a dangerous team? You've seen enough now with JP there. He's been there for three or four games. Have you seen a noticeable difference in terms of when Plum was there? And I know you started analysing them three, 4 months ago to now.
Mm.
In lay terms, I don't need the detail, the intricate specifics.
Mm. Now, look, we've spoken about the Sharks under JP. There has been an improvement across several facets. I think probably... Notably, they putting boot to ball a bit more. Defensively, maybe a bit more conservative, but that's got them some more sort of integrity. So their line bends more than it breaks now. There have been a few things that haven't gone as well. So maybe the line-out is something that they'll want to improve. It's maybe taken a step back. But the defensive line-out is the best in the URC. And you saw that on full display at Cape Town Stadium. Absolute raiders. Vince Chituka is a sniper. So I think the most important change is the Sharks look like they've got some growing belief. And that's key.
And their scrum is good.
Always has been.
And regardless of how poor their results were, their scrum was always good in matches. They were strong against Ulster. They were strong against Saracens. The one thing you could always say in a Sharks performance is their scrums functioned. Okay, attacking lineout has been good, a little bit inconsistent. Yep. Like you said, the defensive lineout, very strong. I mean, up until the 79th minute, the Stormers didn't look like going anywhere from any form of more. Well, they had to catch the ball first to go and do a lineout more, which they didn't on five occasions. 10 metres from the try line. Inaccuracy. Get it right, boys. Get it right. Player responsibility. Sasha said it afterwards. Don't blame the coaches. Blame the forwards.
I love that.
I want run for ball. I can't do it all.
Blame the forwards.
Blame the forwards, eh? Get out the way, fat boy. It's going to require a bit of a different approach and different mindset from the Stormers. Speaking to my good mate, Gavrich, he always says, ban the word, it's in our DNA, helter skelter. But I'm expecting a bit more of an intelligent rugby display, something similar to what we saw when they went overseas, assessed the conditions and played the merit of the moment, which means if it's on, it's on, and they'll always go for it. But not trying to kind of produce the miracle pass from kickoff. Just catch the opening kickoff, and that's a good start for me. Mm. The Stormers catch that first kickoff. If it's a kickoff received,
they win the World Cup.
Mate, they're in a good space. If they just catch it and they exit, I mean, that coaching box is just going to go, yes, baby! What a start to a game.
Yeah. Now, look, I think execution is, and I hate that word, execution and balance, two words I can't stand in rugby. But if, you know, I don't think it's so much about whether they're playing intelligent rugby or not. I think the problem with the Stormers has been we won a massive volume of lineouts in the 22, but we converted none of that into points when we needed to. And so I think it's about taking those opportunities. And again, that's like a euphemism for get it right. But if we weren't playing intelligent rugby, we don't have that volume of attacking lineouts. So everything is set up. The building blocks are there. We've won field position. We've won possession in field position. So you know, you've got set piece territory, but that isn't worth any points. You don't get a point for getting a lineout in opposition 22. You get a point for scoring a try or for kicking a penalty. And we didn't do that. And so that's what needs to get fixed. I think between that and the scrum issues, and the balance of the scrum penalties, if you can flip that around, if you fix the set piece there, and we're winning the scrum penalties, and we're winning our lineouts in opposition 22, then it's a whole different game. And I think some of the desperation is downstream from that. So you see stuff that's out of character because of the pressure that's come from losing your lineouts and not winning the scrum penalties. So I would think those are two key focus areas to change the result this week.
A question that I got asked was, given how poorly the lineout functioned, three that went basically straight to the jumper of the Sharks, and then two that were skew. And now remove your Stormers hats and the Stormers game, but if you're coaching at any level and you're coaching a team, and confidence is one thing, you miss one lineout and you start getting the shakes, you miss the second one, you start believing your jumpers believe they can't jump, your lifters believe they shouldn't lift, and the hooker just doesn't know what's going on, okay? Now, the tail ball is obviously the most powerful to attack from when it comes to field position, and you can still have a fairly effective maul from a middle ball, but you really get nothing from the front ball except you win the ball. When do you then say to your hooker, just win us the ball and we will set something up from there in terms of phase play?
So I mean, in American football, the coaches call all the plays. And you can make all the technical and tactical adjustments because there's the break after every single play. And so, and even in that sport, there's a level of player ownership for making adjustments that are game changing. But you can see how in that game, it's slanted more towards the coaches because you have access to the players to alter those things. In rugby, you have much more limited access to your players to make adjustments. And so you need to build a team where the players take tactical responsibility for making those adjustments on the field and on the fly. And so it's not a situation where the players are waiting to get a call from the coaches. So it's that the players have to decide that. And that, as much as in hindsight, statistically, you go, well, why didn't you just take the front? That is a decision that the players have to make in the madness of the firefight. And I suppose when they get it right, you say, well, that was brilliant. You guys made the best decisions. And when they get it wrong, you say you'd made the wrong decisions. But being a Monday morning quarterback is easier than being there on game day and getting it right in the moment. So you may be right there for 20 minutes of that second half. We were forward down. So the lineout was operating without a key lifter and a key jumper at moments. And so that affects what you can and can't do around the lineout and also how you can contest the lineout. But absolutely, it is easier to win the ball at the front. But if the other team knows that that's what you're aiming for and they load the front of the lineout, then you can't throw to the front of the lineout because they're waiting for you there. So then you've got to try and execute somewhere else and now you're in a reaction zone.
If you look at, you said you hate the words balance in rugby, you hate the words execution, unless it's aimed maybe at a player or two. But we've got to take responsibility, we've got to take ownership. That's another cliche that every player puts out post the game, especially when it hasn't gone well.
Yeah.
How does one, as a coach or in the coaching setup, define a player taking responsibility as opposed to how a player defines taking responsibility? Because Dobbo mentioned the lineouts were just, it's inexcusable, five. Equally, he mentioned two yellow cards through lack of discipline, being warned, next one. And a senior player then who commits the professional foul, rather cough up the 7 points and stay 15 on 15 and back yourself to get the seven back. Again, questions that get asked to me on WhatsApp and inbox, layperson questions. That person just goes to the game on a Saturday, switches on the telly. They don't know the intricacies of the game. They say the guy had one job to do. That was catch the ball from the kickoff and he knocked it on. But he was catching it for 45 minutes pre the opening whistle. How do you get the message across? What is the message?
Well, look, I don't have the answers to that. I've never been a professional head coach, but I can tell you from my experience and what I understand about the game that, it's a fine line because if you tell your open side flanker, if you concede penalties, I'm going to tear up your contract, then that open side flanker just will never put his hands in the breakdown and will never be offside and will never take a chance that wins you a game-winning turnover. So you'll get what you wanted, no penalties, but you'll also get no turnovers. So you've got to ask that guy to make judgment calls and you've got to trust him to do that. And there'll be times where he oversteps the mark and it's a stupid mistake. And there'll be times where he underdoes it because he's scared of disappointing you. And you've got to walk that road with that guy and equip him and then trust him to make the best calls. It doesn't mean that the accuracy is going to be there every single time. But whenever you have a fine margin, whenever you're on the edge of the envelope, there's going to be times when you're over, there's going to be times when you're under, and there's going to be times when you're on the sweet spot. And as a coach, you're trying to prepare all the players to be as close to on the edge of the envelope as you can get them, understanding that human nature means there's going to be times when you overcook and undercook it. And you're just trying to keep your team in that equilibrium. But it's more of an art than a science because, again, it's not PlayStation rugby. So you're dealing with human error and you're dealing with human psyche. So it's always in a state of flux. You're trying to keep your team primed and aggressive and playing fast, but not playing reckless.
What is the strength of the Storm? Is 11 from 13?
Well, nice jerseys.
Nice home and away strip. The best quality.
By far.
What else?
Storm's
articulate
got
leadership.
Yeah, look, mate. Storm's, if you just look at the numbers, fantastic scrum, fantastic maul, efficient lineout, among the top defenses in the comp for points and tries. Efficient attack, can cut you on transition, great sort of combat skills, post-contact meters, power carries, power tackles. Across the board, the Stormers are in a good space, statistically speaking. But again, talking about the human influence on those performance data, you know, you've got to keep the team in that prime state to be able to perform like that. And it's impossible for players to perform at their very best 52 weeks of the year when you factor in things like injury, rotation, form, and. And there are many, many external factors that influence players, home life, selection or non-selection for the box, niggling injuries, the number of guys that are, you know, that are carrying injuries or having to deal with injuries or nursing injuries, all of that stuff impacts it. So it is a very fluid environment.
To use a golfing parlance, they did a survey many years ago where they did a study of all these golfers, top golfers, and where they had to make a putt to save par and that same putt to make a birdie. And there was something like a 70% differential. The guys who had the putt to make a birdie, 30% of them actually got it. 70% saved the hole. The one thing the Stormers have got, they got points on the board. They could have seen these two games as birdie games. They're not saving par, where the Sharks are saving par. Would there be a different mentality if the Stormers were 3 from 9 and not 8 from 9? Does that also weigh on their head? Potentially, not just the Stormers, any team that, you know, we can still drop a game here and get it back. You talk about the human element. Mm. It's not as much as it's great for their top two prospects to win. It's not a train smash for them to lose in Durban, but it's a big blow to the Sharks to lose another home game in Durban for their top 8 prospects. Mm.
Look, I'm not in the arena, but I can 100% believe that is a possibility. I think also the expectation around a team that is unbeaten grows week on week on week. Like, if you're in a season where you've won half of your games, you're not getting text messages from your best mates and your high school coach saying, wow, I can't believe you guys are unbeaten. This is amazing. Could this be the perfect season? But you are getting those if you're unbeaten, right? So subconsciously, that pressure, I would imagine, starts to build. And so whether or not that factors into the psyche of every player in every moment, I don't think so. But I think that definitely is, you know, is an issue. The fact that teams that are winless can feel desperate and produce some of their best rugby in responding to that, I think is confirmation that the reverse can also be true. So I think those kind of things are definitely a fact. I don't think teams are looking at the log saying, I'm not really going to give it my all this week because it doesn't really matter whether we win or lose. We can eat a loss here. I don't think it's a complacency thing, but I definitely think that a team's form and a team's record can factor into how sharp they are.
All right, looking at the game, again, to the punt who's going to be watching it on telly, the fan, the one going to the ground, fortunate to be in Durban, going to the ground. How different do you think the game will play out in terms of playing style, given it's going to be 28 degrees in Durban, but the humidity will be there, to what we saw in Cape Town, where it was a near-perfect night. There was no wind in Cape Town. It was a great summer's evening. And then given that they played each other a week before.
Well, I think that's the key thing right there. That's the point of interest for me is, and I think this has been undersold from a marketing point of view by the URC, is this back-to-back thing makes this a series now. You know, it's not like, oh, well, we'll see them in March. It's, hey, we just played you in Cape Town. Now let's both get on a plane and go to Durban and let's go hammer and tongs again. And so you'd think both teams are thinking, okay, so what adjustments are the other team going to make and how do we counter that? And that creates a level of intrigue, right? Espionage and counter-espionage. Like, what's going to, you know, maybe the home run, maybe the checkmate is to do exactly the same thing. But you would kind of, it adds a layer to this contest because it's not just, oh, well, let's watch how they played against Cardiff and Connacht in the last 2 weeks before we play them. It's like, hey, we played them last week. It's going to be the same guys on deck. How's it going to be different? So I think that's the point of interest for me.
And home and away, back to back, if you come unstuck twice, you've got to take it on the chin and say, I've got some things to do.
Sure.
Best man won on the day. So, yeah, that's something that also fascinates me because the Sharks do get to show it wasn't just a one-off played on hype and adrenaline. And the Stormers have the opportunity for redemption as such.
Yeah.
And when I say redemption, not season redemption, but redemption for performance, which was 20% off. Statistically, it was 20% off in everything. but just in energy levels, confidence, style of play, and the Sharks 20-30% up from what we've seen, without a doubt. And kudos to them. They came to Cape Town, I'd say the more desperate side. I don't believe any side is not hungry to win. Everyone wants to win, but the more desperate side. And it just puts a lot of intrigue into this game. I hope there's a good crowd out there, because a full Kings Park is also a really cool atmosphere. The B field, C field, D field, whatever you want to call it.
Rye
areas. Yeah. Yeah, it just goes off. And just wonderful players on show as well this weekend. I'm expecting not necessarily a more conservative Stormers side, but a more disciplined Stormers side. But also, it is in their DNA. If it's on, they'll go for it. And it wasn't too long ago when they put 70 points past the Sharks in a game. I think Marnie Lebok scored about 30. So it's going to be a cracker. It's 5:30 is the kickoff on Saturday. And it's the last of the South African URC games, basically, till the last week in February. When did they go last week in February?
No, the Lions.
When they play the Lions, and the week after they play the Bulls at Loftus. So that's again back-to-back derbies. Then they do come home for the Dragons in Cape Town, and the Dragons have certainly been an improving team. They've gone to some places, just lost to Munster in Cork, a 78th-minute penalty, and have knocked over some big teams when playing at home. So there are no gimmies at the moment. They still have the Investec Champions Cup, the last 16 that they mentally is in the back of their minds. That's the Bulls and the Stormers. That's the 3rd and 4th of April. So this next 2 weeks is going to be really important for them to get a bit of downtime, mental kind of switch off from the game. But you want to go into that break as a winner. You don't want to go into that break doubting yourself regardless of log position. I was in Cardiff when the Boks were slaughtering Wales, slaying the Dragons, 73-0. You were sending me text messages, 7-0, 12-0, 17-0. What, it's 10 minutes gone. And the Lions were running amok at Loftus. What is going to be different about Ellis Park to that opening game in terms of derbies? And we both had the Bulls to win quite well at Loftus.
Yeah, well, I got that one wrong, and I may get this one wrong as well, but I'm thinking the Lions can win it this week, mate, again. And sweep the Bulls this season. I think the Bulls are definitely improving. But the Lions, like I keep saying, are playing some clever rugby. The Bulls have improved since then, mate, because they've gone back to a few fundamentals. Their defense is definitely on the rise. And they're still advanced behind this major, major scrum and maul. And those are the things that the Lions are going to have to solve to win this game. But if the Lions do manage to solve the set-piece challenge, find some parity there, they are a very efficient team on both sides of the ball. They win turnovers at a low rate of tackles, and they score tries, mate, at a low rate of phases. So they are incisive on attack. They don't hang around the defense before they get their hand on the ball. So that transition opportunity really brings the Lions to life. And so if they can find a way to just stem the tide at scrum time and sort of lock down an anchor at maul defense, they've got a chance.
What are their strengths as a team collectively, and then individually, who do you look to? If you are preparing to kind of like counter them, what would the Bulls be looking at as danger areas? And what makes the Lions a team that you always believe can knock over whoever?
Yeah, so the Lions are good in a number of facets. In general play, I would say, they're strongest. So they have ways on defense of getting that ball back. And then when they get it back, after defending a very sort of, I think in the competition, they're amongst the most efficient in terms of the number of phases they defend before they get the ball back. And then that's when their natural instincts from the days of Uckers comes into play. You're running against unstructured defense, having won a turnover, and then they're electric. And their main man, the key for them is Kewan Horn. I mean, Kewan Horn is at the vanguard of everything the Lions do. He's central to their kicking game and their counter-attacking game. And he's a massive, massive player for them. I think Christmas being a great addition to that team, because now you know if you concede a penalty, he's going to put it over. And he's shown some signs of playmaking ability, as you saw in the last game. The Lions are, like I say, they're incisive. So they can convert possession into tries at a very, very low rate of phases. And then in the kicking game, they win their contestables, mate. They win their contestables, and that puts you under pressure. So you've gone from a position of having them on the wrong side of the field to them having field position now and possession. And that makes it tricky to contain them.
And they do seem to be a happy squad, eh? Regardless of results. And that's why when they go on the road, they're one of the teams that traditionally do quite well on the road. I mean, those two draws could comfortably be in two wins. The Newcastle Red Bulls, they should have won that game. Mm. Even in previous seasons, they've travelled well. So when they don't, when they lose what you think is going to be a win overseas, it's quite a surprise. And then they tend to implode at times at home when they've got the game there and they fall away in the last 10 minutes. Yep. But players are staying there. Horn signed again for 2 years. Hashim Peed, the revelation at under 20 level.
Yeah, he's extended.
Yeah, SK Warmers and then to Bishops, S under 20 and then to the Lions. He's extended to 2028. So the guys are sticking around. They want to play for that club.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to break into the top eight. They're always there and thereabouts, and they need to get that home win. Mm. The Bulls, Uckers, back-to-back wins overseas, in Par and in Edinburgh, both by 2 points, Pollard's conversion being the difference. But Mungrel on defense, scrambled, played with heart and desire, which is what we didn't see probably in the first month under Uckers, that desperation. Does it now translate into a more complete performance at Ellis Park?
No, you'd have to think so. You'd have to think so. They're definitely on the build. But yeah, I don't know what it is. I feel like the Lions have an understanding on the Bulls. Like, look, the Lions have never beaten the Bulls at Ellis Park in 4 attempts in the URC. They're 2-7 against the Bulls all time in the URC. They have found ways to beat them at Loftus. So I think it's almost like a milestone marker for these guys. I think this is the game. I think the Lions will have some special plans around that. What the Bulls have got is a massive dominant pack of forwards. So the trick is to try and move those guys around the field and then try and get some sort of a conditioning speed advantage against them. And one concern we've had about the Bulls and South African rugby in general is this thing where we come out and play our best rugby for the first 25 minutes, punch ourselves out, and then are clinging on in the final 20. So the Bulls are going to need to be smart about that conditioning challenge, about how they take on the Lions there. I do think they will be an improved team. Their defense is definitely on the rise. And they are playing some great rugby, and they've unlocked some guys there. In Cheswell Yuster and Seb de Klerk of recent, they've got that speed element to it. So I think it's going to be a cracking game. Another high-scoring one in the Highveld.
All right, two great South African URC derbies, one in Durban, one in Johannesburg. There is top 14. There's a full round of URC. Go to Africa Picks. That's why I'll be giving kind of my spreads. Most of the teams only get announced on Friday morning. As we said there, it's really an unknown. We don't know how many of these Six Nations internationals will be playing this weekend, which does change the dynamic. So there could be some very good odds on Africa Picks when it comes to the URC English Prem as well. A lot of teams weakened because of England call-ups. But a notable achievement, Rob Dupreer, Sale Sharks, former Stormers and Sharks man, who's off to play in France next season. He is going to be playing his 85th successive Prem game since he joined the club.
Insane.
That is the most incredible turnaround. He has started, this weekend he will start his 85th in succession. He hasn't missed a game, playing either at 10, 12 or 13.
Incredible. Incredible.
I mean, that's getting your money's worth as a club owner.
I mean, that is the home run right there. A guy who was in and around the Springbok setup, and who isn't a Springbok regular, so you have access to him, and who's motivated to deliver his best rugby, is versatile, because Rob plays 10 and centre, and committed. I mean, yeah, Sale have got that whole South African Foreign Legion thing right in the last 10 years. You know, they've got the best out of the guys that they've got there, I would say.
Yeah, well, John O'Ross, the former Lions and Bulls player, whenever they're captain the side at times. Also, 60 games he started in succession for Sale before he moved on. One stage, they had 8 or 9 South Africans in their match 23. Most of them have moved on now. Faf de Klerk being one of them, Uckers, all the Dupree brothers, I think will be gone by the end of this season. But yeah, it's also great when we do see our South African guys in Japan or in the UK, in France, doing well. I saw Dylan Lates doing an interview with his daughter his arm, all in French.
Oh,
magnificent.
No,
yeah, awesome. So it's like, it's great to see our guys embrace cultures, go there, become popular. And you look at Japan, you know, a lot of people said, oh, Peter Steffter is injured again. He only played 2 games in 2 seasons. But Rassi came on and said the club insisted that he actually has the operation.
Wow.
To get him mended for next season as well. So obviously there's something they love about the guy there, even though he's not playing. Mm. And they want him back. But you look at Jesse Creel captaining the side, Kwaka Smith captaining the side, Malcolm Marks are influential, Damien Delandy like an icon over there. So the guys who have gone there, Colby, they do the business over there, and that's great for the box. It's also great for our young players who remain players of interest for those leagues. And then the conveyor belt opens down here. So if a Delandi is not here, another player has to play. So I think it's great just to see us spread all over the world and actually doing well. What's also great is you can win 100,000 Rand if you just register your details on SA Rugby Magazine. And you go into a draw, you get the Digimag you can download for free. Simon Borchard, outstanding editor, always putting together a cracker. Malcolm Marx is on the current cover. And Andre Esraz, Andre the Giant, will be on the next cover. So lots to look forward to, Zals. I hope for your sake, for the Stormers, it's a great weekend in Durban. Will you be there? Will you be in the coach's box?
I won't be there this week.
That could be the issue, eh? That you've been in the coach's box. Find your relief for Dobber and them, okay? As Mike DeFries said to me, please don't come to DHL Stadium anymore. Every time you come here, the Stormers seem to struggle. Go stand in a suite or watch from home, but please don't come. I won't be in Durban. I will be covering the game off telly, which isn't quite ideal, but I think it's going to be two crackers. We've got so much talent here. Tune in at 2:30. For the preview. It's a 3 o'clock kickoff and then 5:30 for the one in Durban, the early one in Johannesburg. We did say we'd give Mackie Hendricks a shout out.
Yes.
Imad, pump it up there. Mackie Hendricks is with Rhino. You'll see his phone number there. That's for Rhino calls. Not for other calls, okay? Mackie said he doesn't mind us putting up his details there. He has joined them. So let's support an ex-Springbok.
Yes.
Ex-Borland player and help him out. Any shout-outs you've got there?
No, mate. None from my side. Go Stormers.